American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting from the internet for Monday, May 12, 2008. And that's right, this would be Newsreel, the wall global sit-rep for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free peace speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along with all of these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free audio podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNOI Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury. And as well, if you happen to be so lucky, we are also still broadcasting and people just showing up. First person at the show is, of course, Ready, Set, Golfer. But Ready, Set, Golfer. Ready, Set, Go Feller with, looks like BSV Dreadlow is also the second one to have just showed up here at the second live note. Archers, 137-102-9999. And nobody's submitted yet a Photoshop of, like, the whole Archer thing. I've got some feedback about that. I don't want to jump the shark here too early. And don't forget, we're also broadcasting in the new wasteland at 34-0319.41 north by 117-3729.50 west. Let's start off with some feedback. Always got the feedback. Always good to go. Dear Sean and Sumerian, thanks for all the media you and the Rant crew have been making over the years. I've enjoyed the projects you and Sim have been involved with from the Sean Kennedy Show onward. The stuff before then, not so much. Sean Kennedy Show onward's good. As well, I especially enjoyed the Rant Meat production, Rant Speak, and was sad to see it go for so many reasons. My many thanks to Sim at Smokehouse for a job well done. And yes, you know, Simmy doesn't get a lot of credit. I also take pride in being a member of the Army of the Flying Monkeys. For almost as long, which is, you know, not like we actually have rank or anything. But, you know, there's in the Army of Flying Monkeys. We have avatars. We have it all. We are the primordial soup of the revolution of the soldiers of the singularity. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe being a soldier for stuff. I mean, you know, that's kind of, isn't that sad, you know, with the war in Iraq right now? It's kind of getting to be bad to be, no one really wants to identify themselves with soldiers. It's funny, in a time of peace, everybody thinks soldiers are cool. But when the job needs to get done, well, soldiers always wind up taking it in the face. Once again, yes, the war in Iraq is all fucked up. But it's all fucked up, not because of the soldiers, it's because of the arm wielding the sword. And that is the problem, or perhaps the head commanding the arm that is wielding the sword. Or maybe the orders that are getting into the head from the arm, you know, you see where I'm going with this. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the letter. I prefer to keep dissent to the minimum. Very good. Always good to keep dissent. Well, I mean, dissent? That's kind of a strange term. But I digress again. But you have to mention that many fans have written in encouraging you in a certain way. So I figure I'd pipe up just so you know an alternative viewpoint about Newsreel. Interesting. Criticism. Always good. I've noticed in the recent shows have had Sim as a co-host. While this was great for the Sean Kennedy Show, it seems to distract and slow down in the meandering conversation on Newsreel. Sim has enough work to do, does he not? Please let Sim appear as a special guest once in a while when Rant Media has a special announcement to make, or in special circumstances. Sincerely, and I'm not gonna give this guy's name because I'm pretty sure he's gonna get flamed into the next millennia. Well, first of all, it's not Sim's fault if I meander during the show. All right, it's really not. And to be honest with you, Johnny Carson, you know, he didn't even do the whole show himself. He always, even on the slow nights, he had Ed McMahon sitting there going, Now, Sim, don't get me wrong, Sim is not Ed McMahon. But if anyone was Ed McMahon, it would be Uncle Dak. But if I was going to have to say anything about Sumerian, there's one thing we have to understand about Sim. Sim is my partner. Partner. That means when Sim hangs it up, so do I. Yeah, scary, isn't it? I know, that whole loyalty thing kind of fucked up. I do understand what you're saying here, though. I mean, you know what I mean? But I think that the meanderings of Newsreel, as I wander aimlessly about on my various quests to say and do things, I think that actually makes the show, you know? I think that's... I mean, any asshole can just read news, you know? But for me, to lend my particular flair, you know, I appreciate Sim. And as well, let's not forget that Sim and I are diametrically opposed. I'm a normal, rational, hyper-intelligent individual, and Vagan Hezbollah has the representation of Sumerian. No, I rip on the guy all the time. But seriously, I mean, I think that we do work on the show because we disagree on a lot of things. Mind you, we've been agreeing a lot on a lot of stuff right now because he's sort of like, yep, John, death camps are bad. And I'm like, right there with you, Sim! You know, it's pretty bad. When even the extremist viewpoints, when you got guys who are like, oorah, Delta Force, Navy SEALs, buds training, all that good stuff, they like that stuff and they're starting to get along with the hippies, you know? What then? And let's not forget that what if the Navy SEALs did start getting along with the hippies? Hey, we got chicks. You betcha. Soldiers are suckers for broads. Don't ever kid yourself. Well, you know, half of them got serious father issues and all the rest of it. But I digress. Once again, I understand your point there. Reference the Sumerian unit. But Sim was here long before anybody else, and Sim will be here long after everyone else is gone. But I do appreciate the feedback, and I'm also open to feedback. I'm also open to not listening to it. But Sumerian is there is no rant without Sim. Seriously, I mean, I'd be some weird guy sitting behind a 7-Eleven talking to myself, and none of you guys would know my name if it wasn't for Sumerian. So as far as I'm concerned, Sim can say and do whatever the fuck he wants on my show, because that's how I'm rolling. Dear Sean, I don't actually have a logo ready at the moment, but I was thinking instead of an archer. This is in reference to Second Life, the archer status. And incidentally, before I go much further, I'm expecting to get mail bombed now, and Sim's probably expecting to get mail bombed. We get a lot of weird shit all the time from crazy people, so don't obsess about this. Don't mail bomb Sim. But well, you know what the fuck, mail bomb Sim, because he's probably going to listen to this, and you know I got to say he's not here right now, right? Second thing, you know, he's going to be listening to the show. How would you feel? Really, how would you feel? I'll come out on the air, read some letter out in the air that says, oh, hey, yeah, we don't really want Sim. We just want you, Sean. How's that going to make Sim feel? You know, but some people get wrapped around the axles with the whole, we're fighting the battle against core political tyranny. Yeah. But the reason why we're fighting the battle against core political tyranny is so we can be silly assholes online. You know, that's sort of the idea here. But fear not. I have more on this. Dear Sean, I don't actually have a logo ready at the moment, but I was thinking about the Archer logo. The Archer logo concept was of an Archer cape with those six numbers, or three sets of three numbers, pardon me, laid out like in a magical cube on the back, which is like three numbers, so it makes like a little box. And those numbers are 137-102-999, because we got this as the new server. Very, very cool. Very, very, very cool. Like it very much. So, anyway, that was the idea. No one submitted it yet, but anyway... I was thinking, instead of an archer, which was instead of a cape, how about the old-style archer-class battle mech from Battletech? The kind that goes with the old concept of WOG mecha, after all. Just a thought. Maybe I'll try to cook up something later today. Fat Ninja. Well, Fat Ninja, you know, that was my first thought, too. But not a lot of people know about the original Battletech. And, as a matter of fact, Battletech got sued right through the floor because they ripped off the mecha designs from Robotech. You see, the archer in Battletech is actually a... archer is a name... Oh, man. I've forgotten. Oh, no, it's not a Spartan. There's the name of a Destroid in the original Robotech books. And I don't know what the hell it's called. Oh, my God, how embarrassing. I think it's a Gladiator. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Purely from back. I believe it was stolen from what I think is a Gladiator in the original... in the original books about the original Robotech role-playing game, there was an original mecha that was there. I believe it was called the Gladiator, and they stole the design for the, and like Robotech sued him and stuff like that. But, again, brilliant. Yes, I like that one better. And I'm kind of jaded because I want to go with the original Robotech one because that's cool. Right? That's cool. Who doesn't want to have the original Robotech one or the original, pardon me, Battletech? But on the flip side, how many people are going to know the original Battletech? Right? Because I'm like 35. Right, now I know about the original Battletech one, but, you know, anyway, I digress. But, I mean, we'll look at all options. Shit, maybe there's something we haven't thought of anything else. Maybe there's some famous dude named Archer, and we'll get a picture of him with the T-shirt on it. I don't know, something like that. I enjoy coded messages. Anyone who reads my books knows that. Sort yourself out. Hey, Sean, hope you get this in the next day or two. Now, I've responded to this prior to this. Okay, but I thought it was a good question. Hey, Sean, hope you get this in the next day or two. I need an outside point of view here. Basically, I have a job interview coming up. pay is not great, but what is really getting to me is this. I'm required to take a psych test for this tech support job. I really don't like the idea of this, and I'm wondering if I really want to work in a place that gives such a test during the interview process. Or am I just making this a big deal for no reason? Thank you. Your name is withheld. Well, yeah, I some people accuse me of censorship because I hold back people's names. I just respect privacy. That would be me. And as well, I have a, it's a scary world we're going into. Now, if you're unemployed and you have a chance to get a job and you need to take a personality profile test in order to get that job, then fine, take the personality profile test, say the magic words and get the fucking job because you need money. Without leverage, you're fucked. So without, if you're not employed, you know what I mean? It sucks because you wind up being homeless. And, you know, again, avoiding the 7-Eleven behind yourself, behind the 7-Eleven talking to yourself thing. Want to avoid that. So what I would suggest in lieu of the 7-Eleven scenario would be to go, I mean, these personality profile psych tests, I mean, these people want to hire you. They're just jumping through the hoops, you know, find out what they're using, hack it, right? They're not hard to hack. Most of the all of the WOGs, people who are WOGs, are generally smarter than the average chicken. All right, most of the average chickens are not so smart. But the WOGs, they are, in fact, elite. Why? Because they have chosen to be. You know what I mean? It's just they've decided to be accountable for their own brain. You know what I mean? They put garbage in, garbage out. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. So it's important that you have a job. And as well, you can use that to your advantage. Say you have to get a job at a place that does this. Everyone knows to do a psych test. Well, then if you can put that on your resume and say, hey, I can't be crazy. I worked for these guys. 9 out of 10 psychologists agree that I'm okay. You know, I had to go to a job that did a background check, too. I mean, guess what, man? This is the really real world. And, yeah, now's the time to make sure that you don't screw around too much. Maybe now that's the reason why you want to avoid being arrested, and you need to go more covert rather than overt, which is why some of the reasons I don't like protests, because I don't think they do anything. Maybe they did once, but unless you're shooting at people, protests really don't do much because you're just going to get quelled, penned in, and tasered. Not so much fun at all. Now, speaking of quelled, penned in, and tasered, hey, an outrageous, we got an action alert here. Everybody listening to this show, if we catch this right away, and that means all you guys out there who are listening in the audience right now, which I've got a crew of about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, something like that. There is an outrageous Justice Department proposal, which was alerted to me by the EFF, and this is something that is time sensitive, so get on this right now. There's an outrageous Justice Department proposal that directs federal law enforcement agencies to collect DNA samples from anyone they arrest. Anyone they arrest, they get DNA from. This new proposal threatens to swell the government DNA's database with the sensitive genetic information of innocent people. Americans involved in peaceful political protests, for example. The public comment period will end on Monday, May 19th, so you got a week from the time this show hits the air. So now is the time to speak out against this proposal that turns out the principle of innocent until proven guilty on its head. So this is like, wow, guess what? We're just going to mugshot fucking everybody. Other things that you want to think about this law. Innocent people do not belong in the criminal DNA database. True that. DNA is no mere fingerprint. It contains sensitive medical information that should not be recklessly collected and stored by the government. DNA profile matching is inexact, and the accuracy varies wildly based on a number of factors. The bigger the database is, the greater the odds are innocent people will be implicated for crimes they did not commit, which is true. A lot of this DNA stuff is in beta, and I don't want to send people to federal ASRAM prison on a beta program. That's just me. Allowing the collection of DNA samples by any third parties will drastically increase the incidence of errors and outright abuse of private genetic information. My PGI, man! I mean, Jesus Christ, who wants the PGI? Seriously, I mean, leave my PGI alone. That's my PGI, not yours. Not yours. Do not want to share my PGI. I want my PGI. Pharmacide alert. Chantrix. Yeah, just in case you thought Pfizer was your buddy. Wrong time. Yes, it's true. We've got a pharmacide alert. These are the fine alerts that I issue whenever I find out there's a drug, which they told you was medicine, but it's not, and it winds up killing you. Yes, it's another classic example of Pfizer's pharmacide killing kids everywhere. Chantrix is this time also known as varicillin. 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 It kind of sounds like penicillin, only it's varicillin. I mean, who thinks this shit up? You know, seriously, how do you get Chantrix out of varicillin? You know what, are you guys throwing darts at this shit or what? Mind you, I'm sorry. No, we forget. They get those names the same way they get every company policy from Pfizer. They get it from Satan. Okay, Chantrix is a product. Now listen to this, it's fucking unreal, okay? Chantrix is a product designed to help smokers quit. However, the FDI had informed healthcare professionals about reports of depression, suicidal thoughts, and changes in mood or emotion within days of starting the Chantrix treatment. Now, the days of, like, within days, so you start taking pills, and all of a sudden shit goes crazy, right? So you gotta think to yourself, what is, you know, what's the time to product on that? You start popping pills and you go nuts, but wait for it. Chantrix works by blocking the pleasure response to nicotine, and has proven by more effective by helping people quit smoking than the nearest rival, Zyban! Zyban does it for 16, this shit does it for like 20%, 80% don't succeed, that doesn't make it success, that makes it awkward. Pfizer claims that the most common side effects of Chantrix are nausea, sleep disturbance, constipation, gas, and vomiting. And if that's not enough, that's what they admit to. They deny the whole grabbing the chainsaw part and going Leatherface. The reports of people experiencing suicidal thoughts came as a shock. Oh my god. Really? It was only a few flipper babies. After the story about the drug aired in the Dallas area, more than 5,000 complaints poured in concern Chantrix side effects. 5,000. In the UK, a popular television editor, this TV editor, slashed his wrist just a few weeks into his 12-week Chantrix program. So he starts the program 28 days later. Waka, waka, waka! In the U.S., a promising musician suddenly abused his girlfriend, broke into a neighbor's home, and was shot to death by said neighbor. Yeah, again, 28 days later, you go fucking crazy. Booyah! You know what I mean? It's nuts. 33-year-old Amy Gaza had smoked since she was 16, trying time again to quit. I've tried lozenges. I've tried about everything and everything you can think of, she said. She thought she'd found the wonder drug of Chantrix, the new anti-smoking pill prescribed by her doctor. This is why you need to buck the fuck up, use your willpower, and just say no to drugs. Then Gazra said she tried to kill herself. CBS News correspondent Thalia Suras reports Gaza has a large scar on her wrist to prove it. It was like a psychotic breakdown that came out of nowhere. Scary fucking shit, man. Like, hello, human neocortex. Very complicated. Don't really know what it is. Don't really know what it does. Maybe you shouldn't fuck with that. You know, I'm just saying, you know, if you don't know what something does, you know, you don't break it. It's not like, you know, you can go buy another brain. You know, don't overclock your system if it's the only one you have. You know, I'm just saying. Now, in Shadowrun news, I don't know if you guys have heard about this story, but this is a very serious story, which just came out of nowhere. This is like a real live 24 episode. I shit you not. No doubt you've probably heard about this guy named Roland Carnaby. Okay? Carnaby. C-A-R-N-A-B-Y. Roland. Like the headless Thompson gunner. This dude is not a Thompson gunner, but fuck yeah, he's headless because he got shot. Now, you're thinking to yourself, why would the law enforcement agents shoot the CIA? That seems kind of crazy. Now, the whole deal is this guy who's like well-known, okay? He's not like some rogue CIA dude who nobody knows. This guy went to meetings and shit. He spoke at conferences. This guy was well-known. Like, people knew who this guy was, okay? He was this, and this is like a true blue Jack Bauer kind of dude. So this CIA agent, this Roland dude, had proof that a suitcase nuke apparently had arrived inside the U.S. from Israel on Tuesday. So he's chasing a nuclear device. Again, 24. He was chasing the device. And the Israelis, who apparently had a nuclear device. As local law enforcement was called in for some unknown reason, cops allegedly began chasing the CIA agent instead of the Israelis, and ultimately shot him to death. What? Despite photographic... And this is on tape! Let's not... The whole thing's on video. Despite photographic proof that Roland Carnaby was inside CIA headquarters in Langley, the CIA is now publicly denying Roland Carnaby worked for them. A cover story is allegedly being fabricated to what really went on. Federal sources have told the writer of this report that there was real threats of a nuclear device in Galveston, Texas. Okay? And I'm linked to a couple of these things. Now, the funny thing is here, you got this guy, maybe the whole thing's nothing, but this whole thing is, like, really fucking strange. Really strange. Like, why would that happen? If there was a 9/11 event that was occurring, and it was an inside job, let's just say, because, of course, I'm not even going to beat that dead horse, but let's just say that some guy had knowledge of 9/11. Let's say you had prior knowledge of 9/11, okay? And you're not even a, like a CIA dude, okay? If you had prior knowledge of 9/11, I'm really certain that if you knew what six guys to hit at the airport, you know, you'd show up and turn them off. You know, let's cut the shit. like, if you had a vision from God or something like that, and you knew, you fucking knew, okay, you got in a time machine, you knew these guys were going to do the six, and you know what, if you showed up and executed these fuckers, there'd be no way to prove it, you'd go to jail for the rest of your life, but you would have saved the lives, and you would have stopped 9/11 from happening, and the ensuing insanity which has incurred since then, okay? Would you not do that? I would. That makes me a terrorist, so fucking be it. Okay, but yeah, if I could, you know, stop the 9/11 hijackers, I'd give my life for that shit. Yes, and I'd go to federal ass-ram prison for it. And as I'm getting anally raped, I'd probably think, well, at least, you know, I stopped the major fucking war. And I don't have to look at that wedding photo of that poor kid who married the chick who's a horribly burned old shit. But interesting story. Be interesting to see how that goes along. If a nuke goes off in Texas, right in the oil refining areas, wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't that be interesting? If a nuke went off in Texas right by the refineries, what would that do? Well, gas prices would go through the fucking roof, crazy shortages. Oh, yeah, let's not forget that Texas is the most adverse to any of these world domination plans. Like, if you were going to try, what state do you think you'd have the most trouble with if you were going to totally do the Orwellian crackdown? Who do you suppose would be give you the most fucking trouble? New Hampshire would be a problem. New Hampshire would be a problem. I don't think California's got the balls. I really don't. I think there's too many weak fucking hippies down there. I think they'd have problems with some of the southern states. But the big one, like the one where Texas is like, yeah, fuck you, we're gonna wrap ourselves in our own flag, and if Texas is the only thing that stands. But those people would like, they'd really have problems. I think Montana, they'd probably have a real shitstorm in Montana. It'd take a while to clear that joint out. Because the guys who are underground in Montana, man, they're like, you're not gonna get them out of there anytime soon. These guys, like, you know, Wolverines is like a mantra to those people, okay? So anyway, I digress. But an interesting premise. It would be interesting to see what would go on in the next little while. Now in Memristor news, this was sent in by Sane Trainer, thank you very much. Anyone who ever took an electronics laboratory class will be familiar with the fundamental passive circuit elements, the resistor, the capacitor, and the inductor. However, 1971, Leon Chua reasoned from symmetry arguments that it should be a fourth fundamental element, which he called a memristor, short for memory resistor. Although he showed that such an element may have many interesting and valuable circuit properties, until now, no one has presented either a useful physical model or an example of a memristor. Here, we show using an analytical sample that memristors arise naturally in nanoscale systems, which solid-state electronic and ionic transports are coupled under external bias voltage. Those results serve as a foundation for understanding a wide range of hysteric current voltage behavior observed in many nanoscale electronic devices that involve the motion of charged atomic molecular species, in particular, certain titanium dioxide crosspoint switches. Now, I'm sure there's some wogs going on who understand what the hell I was just talking about, but I sure don't, so if you can explain that to me, that'd be cool. But what I do know there is that we do have a new type of resistor, and hey, who doesn't want to have another type of resistor? More electronics for me, please. And anything, I mean, come on. A memory resistor? Hell yeah. That'd be like any one of us who has books, you know, that we're going to be the people with the memory who are part of the resistor. Now, in Power Armor news, sent in by my buddy, the Renegade Rabbit, who is hot, by the way. She's very hot. Anyway, in Power Armor news from Renegade Rabbit, U.S. soldiers may soon be suiting up in the Raytheon Company's version of an Iron Man wearable robotic armor, the company says, will give them the ability to lift heavy objects with little effort while still allowing freedom of movement. Why is this story a newsreel? Because it's a classic example of militainment. This is what they're doing. Okay, the Iron Man show, the way that Iron Man and the U.S. Army are working together is unbelievable, okay? Now, we've been talking about Power Armor, Raytheon has got some Power Armor they want to field. Sarcos is doing some stuff. The suit is being developed by the U.S. Army and Raytheon Sarcos Research Facility in Utah, run by scientist Stephen Jacobson. It has been under development since 2000. So again, Sarcos, Raytheon, Iron Man. Maybe we can get some Power Armor on the go. Maybe we can get some shit happening on the bounce, please. And some people are like, well, Sean, you know, I don't really know. Hey, I know what I know. I want to stop seeing kids get turned off in Iraq. And it's pretty hard to turn people off when you're walking around wearing Power Armor. You know what I mean? You want to shoot at me with the AK? I happen to have a 20mm cannon. Thank you for calling. In useless Big Brother news. Now, as we all know, useless Big Brother in England, right? Those people have CCTV cameras. They got cameras watching cameras, okay, over there. They got cameras everywhere. The camera fucking psychosis. But apparently, massive investment in CCTV cameras to prevent crime in the UK has failed to have a significant impact despite billions of pounds spent on the new technology. A senior police officer piloting a new database has warned only 3% of street robberies in London were solved using CCTV cameras, despite the fact that Britain has more security cameras than any other country in Europe. The warning comes from the head of the Visual Images, Identifications, and Detections Office, Video, at Scotland Yard as a force launches a series of initiatives to try to boost conviction ratings using CCTV evidence. They include a new database of images, which is expected to use technology developed by the sports advertising industry to track and identify offenders. That's pretty enemy of the state. Putting images of suspects in muggings, rape, and robber cases out on the internet for next month. Wow, we're going to post them on the internet. Building a national CCTV database incorporating pictures of convicted offenders as well as unidentified suspects. Do we know them? No, put their picture up. The plans for this have been drawn up but are on hold while the technology required to carry out an automated searches is refined. This is a really bad idea because you know what? People look alike. Okay, people look alike, and how easy is it to frame somebody if they sort of look like a bad, grainy image? You know what I'm saying? Use of CCTV images for court evidence has so far been very poor. According to Detective Chief Inspector Mick Neville, the officer in charge of the Metropolitan Police Unit, CCTV was originally seen as a preventative measure. Neville turned the security document World Conference in London. Billions of pounds have been spent on kit. That's the word he used. But no thought has gone on how the police are going to use the images and how they'll be used in court. It's been an utter fiasco. Only 3% of the crimes were solved by CCTV. There's no fear of CCTV. Why don't people fear it? They think the cameras are not working. Now, this is unbelievable that you've got a guy willing to come out from the police side of things and call it bullshit. You know what I'm saying? That is amazing to me. That this guy's willing to come out on the air and call the CCTV cameras bullshit. And he's obviously pissed off about it because they put billions of pounds into that when they should have been putting billions of pounds into training officers. What is the fucking point of putting cameras everywhere? All you've got is video footage of other people stealing your stuff. That's all you have. Sorry for calling, but you ain't got shit, Jack. Okay, wow, there he is. He's breaking in the store. Yeah, he's got the TV. Yeah, we knew he stole the TV, but there he is. He's got the hoodie on. He's carrying the TV out of there. You know. Downer. Very definitely a downer. Okay. Now, let's move on to some Gattaca news. We do have a pretty good piece of news here. I don't want to hit you with all the negative stuff. I mean, people are starting to wake up. It's good to have a little bit of positive. A little bit of positive here. In the Gattaca news system. Yes. In Gattaca news, as my thing goes insane. The House today passed a measure by a whopping 414-1, who the fuck voted against this, margin that would prohibit health insurers from canceling or denying coverage or hiking premiums based on genetic predispositions to a specific disease. Bada boom, bada bing. Thanks for calling. And if you don't think that the health insurance company is going to get access to the police database in order to check your DNA and also see if you're a risk on the down low so that they can charge up your premiums, think again. There will be collusion. The legislation, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, called GINA, thank you Jesus, also bars employers from using genetic information to hire, fire, promote, or make any other employment-related decisions. Who was the person who voted against this? Ron Paul voted against this. Ron Paul voted against the GINA Act. I guess from some sort of a eugenics standpoint, it would make sense, you know, because it's a pretty hard decision. I can see why he voted against it, but I don't really know what is the what the best thing to do with this is. You know what I'm saying? Like, which is the one? I'm all for taking power away from health insurance companies. Thank you, because those people are the scum of the earth anyway. Okay. So Ron Paul apparently doesn't see it that way. That's his thing, which is funny because everyone talks on the internet. Like, I'm sure I'm going to get all kinds of email now because, you know, oh, my God, you spoke about the Messiah, Ron Paul. You know, I mean, everybody's freaking out about Ron Paul. You know, not so much. Incidentally, you know who's going to win the election? This is fucked up. This is fucked up. I still say that, you know, Hillary Clinton's going to win this because I happen to think it's bought and paid for. Okay, I think that the whole thing is arranged. Okay, so all this shit that's happening right now, I think, is a big show, and I'm not sure exactly how it's going to all pan out. I think there might be an attack. I think Obama might get killed. I don't know. But I, at the end of the day, after all the dust is settled, I bet you Hillary's going to be in the shop, you know. And if I'm wrong, which, please, Lord, please help me be wrong. I'd like to be wrong. If I'm wrong, Obama will, you know, save us all. If I'm really wrong, McCain's going to get in there, and, well, you may as well just start packing the fucking lurp bag right now and looking at, you know, land in a foreign area. It just scares the shit out of me. But anyway, the measure, this Gattaca Act thing, which was unanimously passed the Senate just last week, now goes to President Bush, who's expected to sign it into law. But who knows what the fuck he's going to do, because he's crazier than a shithouse rat. Since no one is born with perfect genes, we all potential victims of genetic discrimination. This legislation marks the beginning of a new era in healthcare where a person's genetic information can no longer be used against them. Bill sponsor Representative Louis Slaughter. Wow. Representative Slaughter. There's an online name, eh? I am Lou Slaughter. Anyway. Said after legislation sailed through the House, by prohibiting the improper use of genetic information, Americans will encourage to take advantage of tremendous life-altering potential of genetic research. Slaughter, who's a microbiologist with a master's degree in public health, introduced the first genetic anti-discrimination legislation 13 years ago. Thank you very much. You get into heaven. Physicians now have access to more than 1,000 genetic tests to diagnose or assess risk of developing potentially life-threatening diseases, including breast cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and Parkinson's. Consumer advocates hailed the passage of the package, which they say will close gaps in the state laws and encourage Americans to take advantage of potentially life-saving genetic testing. They may all shun of the fear of being sacked or denied health benefits, which is, again, true! You know what I mean? We're doing a lot of stuff with genetics. With the long-awaited federal passage of GINA, researchers and clinicians can now actively encourage Americans to participate in clinical trials without fear of genetic discrimination, said Joanne Bogman, executive vice president of the American Society for Human Geneticists. Well, yeah, that's an interesting sideline, but I'm not going to encourage anybody to, you know, nobody sticks needles in me and beta, okay? Avoid beta, you know, very simple tenet here. Furthermore, under the federal protection provided by GINA, healthcare practitioners will now be able to recommend appropriate genetic testing and screening procedures unencumbered by the fear of discrimination based upon results. Again, scary, scary, scary. I'm not so sure I trust the big medical pharma sort of cohesion, collusion sort of monster, which exists, but, you know, it'd be also nothing for these people to just, you know, kind of do like the lost leader. Oh, hey, you know what? We got this huge database. Oh, now it's law. We can have access to the database. Ba-ding! Hooray! What you thought was not going to be used for the law enforcement, in fact, is. Sorry, we lied to you. In the 1970s, many blacks were denied jobs and insurance coverage because they carried the gene sickle cell anemia, including those who lacked two copies of the mutation necessary to get sick. No, they didn't get jobs because they were black, and they used that as an excuse so that no one looked like they were racist fucks. That was why no one gave a shit about sickle cell. And will you give me a fucking break? You give me a break. I don't like your haircut. That's why I'm not racist. It's just, you know, your haircut. You know, I'm going to make sure you cover your piercing when you work here at Starbucks because, you know, you're freaking people out with that piercing there. So just put the Band-Aid over top of that, even though it violates your, you know, fundamental. You know, I don't really get this, okay? Your race doesn't mean shit. I hate to say this to you, but it's the same as, like, your hair color and your eye color. You're getting played. Okay, you're getting played. You're getting turned against your buddy because he happens to look different from you. It's very obvious with things like race, but pretty soon we're going to start talking about your nose shape, whether or not you're a godchild. Go check out the film Gattaca. Go check out the film Gattaca. That's what we're talking about here. And already they're talking in the news about the human species splitting into two species and an evolutionary state, right? Because there's the haves and the have-nots. And there's been haves and have-nots for so long that they're starting to, apparently, evolve differently. The have-nots are evolving into, you know, these nice blue-collar... They're blue-collar because they have a band around their neck that's blue. And, yeah, that's how it works. And they're the working class. And we're going to call them the Eloy. And we'll be the other guys. We'll be the guys with the white collars on. And we're in charge, right? We know what's going on because we're the smart ones because we've evolved above that. And we're going to call ourselves the Morlocks. Yeah, that's a good gang. So we, the Morlocks, will eventually eat the Eloy as we do already. Yes, we don't physically consume the poor. No, we're not chopping them up. We're not quite chowing down Soylent Green yet. But we're sure as shit chewing them up in every single meat grinder we can find on the planet. You betcha. We're not killing and eating them because we're finding better uses for human flesh. Like subscription-based services. Let's turn everybody into economic slaves. That's a great idea. And absolutely, we can use that to prop up our system because, after all, fuck compassion. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, why give a fuck about the other guy? It's the law of the jungle. It's the law of the jungle. We have to look after. Arr! Be killed or be killed. Guys, the only thing that sets us apart from the animals is our ability to go, no, we're not going to follow the law of the jungle. We're going to stand up and say, no, I believe in truth. I believe in justice. Things exist because I'm willing to stand for them. That's what makes me different from an ape, okay? That's the idea here. You are not a slave to the natural law. You have your own personal strength. In 1998, it was revealed that Lawrence Liverpool National Laboratory in Berkeley, California, had secretly tested employees from the 1960s until 1993 for sickle cell anemia, syphilis, and pregnancy without their knowledge or consent. So let me just do some math here. That would be 33 years that they were doing testing on people for all kinds of crazy shit. So anytime that you get blood taken in the United States and you lose sight of that vial, you better assume that is now going to be going into some DNA database. Just understand it is. Okay? If you can't secure it, assume it's compromised. In 2002, Burlington North Santa Fe Railway Company paid 36 employees $2.2 million to settle a lawsuit they had filed, charged that the company had genetically tested them without their knowledge after they submitted work-related injury claims. That's a good settlement. This bill will allow every citizen and their physicians the benefit to participate in the progress of gene therapies, provide all of us nearly early treatment prevention of countless blah, 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 gene therapy. This is great. So they're turning this into a spin on why gene therapy's awesome. No, gene therapy is not awesome. The shit is beta. We don't know what it does. We're going to set that one out. You don't believe me? Go check out a book called Next by Michael Crichton. Yes. Yes, yes, go check out Next by Michael Crichton. Audiobook, great listen. Really good book, really enjoyed it. But he talks a lot about the truth regarding genetics. It's a fictitious book, but there's some interesting stuff in there that every WOG should look at it so you're not sitting there thinking, you know what, maybe I should just answer, yeah. I'm all for the genetics, okay? But I want to see what a long-term sample is first. I'm not going in beta. Fuck that, okay? I want to see what it's going to do to rats, mice, monkeys, everything else before I start sticking needles in my body. Because, you know, 20 years later, oh, shit, you turn into goo. Not so good. Thought it wasn't. Didn't know. Sorry, you're fucked. But you signed the waiver, so right. No. Nobody's early adopting shit until we're really sure of the long-term effects. Call me crazy. Yeah, okay, I'll just be sitting over here being crazy, being healthy, and, you know, watching my diet. Clean food, please. Clean food. In cyberscape news, in London, the rise of gadgets such as the iPhone, BlackBerry, Xbox threatens to unravel the decades of innovation which helped to build the internet, a leading Oxford academic has warned in a new book. Whoa, the ivory tower speaks up. Professor Jonathan Zittrain says the latest must-have devices are sealed, sterile boxes that stifle creativity and turn consumers into passive users of technology. Unlike home computers, the new internet-enabled gadgets don't lend themselves the sort of tinkering and collaboration that leads to technological advances. The mix of gadgets, overregulation, and internet security fears could destroy the old system where mainstream technology could be influenced, even revolutionized, out of left field. I don't want to see a two-tier world where only experts can survive, and the non-experts are stuck something what they don't understand and something that limits them, Zittrain told Reuters in an interview, or Reuters, or Reuters, or whatever the fuck those R guys are who report the news. Now, of course, he doesn't want there to be a Morlocks and Eloy within the tech world. Hey, can't really argue with them there. Zittrain, a professor of Internet Governance and Regulation of the Oxford Institute, Internet Institute. So let me get that. Zittrain is a professor of Internet Governance and Regulation, okay, at the Oxford Internet Institute. So this is the guy who generally, you know, would be the guy trying to look to control the internet. It's like, no. This control you're doing is a bad thing. Oxford University says the internet's simple, open architecture is the key to enormous success and also its flaws. Well, one man's flaw is another man's benefit. Anyway, one man's flaw is another man's feature. Amateur enthusiasts have come up with scores of new ideas by tinkering and with the internet on their own home computers. However, hackers have caused huge disruption by exploiting its loose structure. Yes, well, that's why, you know, you have to have information out there. Sorry, you know, freedom or security, choose one. Zitrain contrasts one of the mass-produced home computers, Apple II, from the 1970s, with Apple's latest gadget, the iPhone. He says the iPhone is typical of what he calls a tethered appliance. There are appliances that are easy to use, but not easy to tinker with. Thank you very much. My problem with Apple. I'd like a mouse with more than one button, please. He writes, they all are tethered because they're easy for the vendors to change them from afar long after the devices have left the warehouses and the showrooms. They are a world away from generative and internet, a term that Zitrain used to describe the open, creative, innovative approach that helped build the internet. The rise of viruses and fraud has also led to tighter controls on PCs, particularly those in schools, universities, offices, and public places. The problem isn't the PCs, guys. The problem is actually the network that you're running on. I think locking people down is kind of a lost leader. It's like bombing Iraq for Al-Qaeda. Doesn't really work. People are often blocked from experimenting with shared computers, and their input is severely limited. That's right. That's very true. There is still time to save the internet, he believes, although the answer lies in social rather than technological change. Society should resist more regulation and place its trust in the internet users. Thank you very much. The success of Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, written and edited by its readers, showed how self-governance can work. I will resist the urge to make a comment here. The internet shows should see themselves as netizens, active participants in an online world rather than passive consumers. The community itself exercises a form of self-restraining and policing, he says. If you see it in Britain when you try to jump a queue, you'll see it on Wikipedia when a page is vandalized. The challenge to the technologists is to build technologies that let people of good faith help without having to devote their lives to it. Yes, very true. Very, very true. And he's written a book about this whole thing, which he's giving away for free. So it sounds to me like his heart's in the right place. But I'll get to that in a minute. But first, some booster news. That's right. There's a new deadly threat, which has been elevated from a Class C to a Class B drug in the UK. If you're in the UK, okay, you need to be aware of this new drug, which is on the street. Yes, it's called cannabis. Marijuana has been reclassified as a Class B drug. The Home Secretary says, this is about what Jackie Smith has said. The Home Secretary says she wants to reverse Tony Blair's 2004 downgrading of the drug because of uncertainty over its impact on mental health. It's uncertainty, bitch. It's the biggest fucking drug sample we got. People have been smoking it for 10,000 fucking years, okay? How much more of a drug sample do we have? And on the same goddamn show, you're talking to me about a smoking drug which is causing people 28 days later to go fucking buck wild, grab the shotgun, and go for the neighbors? And you're giving me shit over weed? Are you fucking kidding me? This doesn't even make sense. How the fuck can these people even exist in the UK? I understand, you guys are just being paid. You haven't had an original thought strike you in fucking years. If you guys had an original idea, you know, it would die of fucking loneliness. But if you expect, I mean, the Brits, they'll roll over and take it in the ass. I understand. I mean, you got those people pretty badly beat down, all right? But Jesus fucking Christ, man. How stupid do you gotta be? Her statement to the MPs came despite the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs review. Despite that, so their own council says, hey, it's not that bad. It's just some grass, man. But since cannabis was downgraded, there has been widespread concern about the increased prevalence of the stronger skunk varieties. Fucking what? The stronger skunk varieties? Correct me if I'm wrong. Skunk is a hybrid, which there's only one skunk. Okay, it's a slang term for weed. There's probably a couple of different skunk hybrids, but yeah. You know, there's a couple books full of different hybrids, you know. I don't think skunk... I tell you what. How about this? How about we ban skunk? Fair ball? Okay, I'll throw you a fucking bone. No skunk weed allowed, huh? Huh? Can't go wrong there. That's got to handle some of it, right? You betcha. You know, there's only probably about 1,000 other strains. You know, anyway. Miss Smith is now accounting for 80%. Mrs. Smith said this now accounted for 80% of the cannabis seized on the streets, so the drug was nearly three times stronger than in 1995. Why, were you smoking it? What are you looking at here? Somebody's growing fucking weed, and you're like, it's three times stronger weed today. It's killing. No, it's not killing anybody. Well, they're not. They're not going out. They're not spending money. They're staying home. They're ordering pizza, and they're playing fucking Wii. That's what they're doing. And if they're too stoned to play Wii, they switch to another console. Okay? That's what they're doing. They're not fucking running around shivving people. They sure as shit aren't grabbing the shotgun and going for the fucking neighbors. Okay? They're not doing that. What the fuck? They've got Pfizer and all these guys are causing people to have psychotic breaks, like, within days, and you got a data sample of a perfectly natural plant, which grows naturally on every continent on the fucking planet, okay? But for some reason, you can't get it through your goddamn head that this thing won't actually kill you. The reason why weed's illegal is because they can't copyright it. They can't copyright it. If they could copyright garlic, motherfucker, the garlic would be a roller, okay? I mean, go do some research on garlic. You can fucking cure yourself with garlic, okay? Between garlic and weed, that's what we need. We need some garlic weed, you know? And your problems would be over, I swear to God. This kind of shit, you know, I understand. Okay, weed is not the answer to your problems, all right? Weed is a medicine which should be used by people who need it, all right? I'm not thinking everybody should just go out and fucking smoke shit and do whatever, okay? That's not the point here. The point here is, it doesn't hurt people. All right? What's your data sample? I defy you. I defy anybody who listens to this program to show me a larger data sample for a drug than one for weed. Go on. I'll fucking wait. Okay? We got people in the Mediterranean who made religions out of this shit, who power smoke toilet bowl rolls of the stuff. Okay? And they're still doing fine. If they stop smoking, they get edgy for a few days and then they hit the ground. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, people's brains wake back up. It's not as bad as it could be. Yes, if you happen to be just as close as you can be to the end of the fucking the ladder and you just need that little bink to put you over the edge, sure. But I'd sooner give a psychotic weed than anything else because, you know, even if he goes crazy, he'll be too lazy and happy to do anything. We'll just feed him some Twinkies and he'll put down the chainsaw. Now, entrapment news. Everybody knows I enjoy, you know, law enforcement. I think the FBI are good guys, okay? I think they're overworked. I think they're all got shell shock. I think they're all got PTSD. You go look at PTSD information. You go look at what people are doing with the whole... if you look at PTSD cases and you look at old cops, they're identical, okay? Most old cops are absolutely PTSD'd out their ass, all right? So somebody needs to look at this. In Europe, they do psych testing on their cops and EMT every 6 months, all right? But not here. No. The FBI has now got this new thing to trap downloaders of illegal porn. I don't agree with this. The FBI has recently adopted a novel investigative technique, posting hyperlinks that purport to be illegal videos of minors having sex, and then raiding the homes of anyone willing to click on them. Whoa. Undercover FBI agents use hyperlink enticement technique, also known as entrapment, which directed internet users to clandestine government server to stage arms raids of homes in Pennsylvania, New York, and Nevada last year. I mean, can you believe that shit? Now, here's the real icing on the cake. The supposed video files actually were gibberish and contained no illegal images. So what you wind up with here is you get somebody clicking on a link and they go to jail. Not so good. Okay, I'm as shoot the pedophile as the next guy. Okay, I'm definitely as shoot the pedophile as the next guy. I'm all about turning those motherfuckers off. But you need to be a little bit more discriminate with that. You just can't start running around shooting people, all right? And just roping people in because they click on a link. No. Not on. Okay, we need to get out of the Ceausescu mindset and move a bit more forwards with this. Today's Daily Hack, I got a couple of them. These are fucking dope. You ready for these ones? These ones are really Gucci. One is the Open GPS Tracker, which was sent to me by somebody, and I didn't write their name down. I think it's in the Daily... I'm sorry, I didn't give you credit, dude. Fuck. Sucks. Anyway, I think it was Kobach. Yes. On the WOG Network, I believe, sent me that. I'm going to say it's him. If not, oh well. Anyway... somebody just said, did he just say really Gucci? Yeah, Gucci's a term and expression that they use the military for really shiny kit, because Gucci, of course, is ridiculously expensive, so anything expensive becomes Gucci, you know. Kind of a bad thing, you know. But anyway. Anyhow, today's Daily Hack is an open GPS tracker. Want to build yourself a GPS tracker? You can! Welcome to the Open GPS Tracker site. The Open GPS Tracker is a small device which plugs into a $20 prepaid mobile cell phone to make a GPS tracker. The tracker responds to text messages, commands, to text motion, sends you its exact position, ready for Google Maps or for your mapping software. The tracker firmware is open source and user customizable. Super Gucci. You want to look after your what? You know what? I got to remove that. You got to remove that. That's like a meme thing. I got to come up with another word to use. Tight. Let's use tight instead. That's fucking tight, all right? Definitely. No loose straps here with this particular one. Very, very sexy. Very nice. Liking the GPS tracker technology. And now, you ready for this one? This has been on the go for quite a few years, okay? This has been on the go for 9 fucking years, all right? Anyway, the Freenet Project is very pleased to announce the release of Freenet 0.7.0. Freenet is software designed to allow the free exchange of information over the internet without fear of censorship or reprisal. To achieve this, Freenet makes it very difficult for adversaries to reveal their identity, either by the person publishing or downloading content. The Freenet project started in 1999, released Freenet 0.01 in March 2000, has been under active development ever since. Freenet is unique in that it handles the storage of content, meaning that if necessary, users can upload content to Freenet and then can disconnect. We've discovered this is the key to requirement of many Freenet users. Once uploaded, content is mirrored and moved around the Freenet network, making it very difficult to trace or destroy. Content will remain on Freenet as long as people are retrieving it, although Freenet makes no guarantee the content will be stored indefinitely. So this is like Uber, BBS posting system. Very, very sexy. And it's available for Windows, Linux, and OS X. It can be downloaded from the link from the site. Super fucking cool. Okay? Very, very slick. Now, Recmedia. From that news story I was talking about, remember that dude, the dude from Oxford, talking about how the whole thing was kind of crazy, and he thinks that we need to, like, kick back, use things like Freenet, retake over the internet? Well, he wrote a book, and he's giving it away for free! Fuck yeah, he is. So, what is the future of the internet? That is what, the future of the internet and how to stop it is the name of his book. The future of the internet explains how the engine that has catapulted the internet from backwater to ubiquity and reveals that it's sputtering precisely because of its runway success. The unwitting help of its users, the generative internet is on a path that locked down, ending its cycle of innovation and facilitating the unsettling new kinds of control. As tethered appliances and applications eclipse the PC, the very nature of the internet and its generativity and innovative character is at risk. And this is why wearable computers have not come out, because people don't want to give you a wearable computer, they want to give you a fucking iPhone. And he gives his shit away for free, so you gotta like that. As well, inside of the Daily Hacks, or I think it was Recmedia. I have lessons in electronic circuits, also going with that. And this is sick. I've got like 6 whole fucking computer labs on electronics. All very, very cool. All totally laid out. Very, very nice. And that's all I got for you this week. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you care, you can donate. But if you cannot donate, please do distribute this program. Make sure it gets to people who need it. If you can donate, please do so by going to clicking on the Donate tab at the Dark Atlas website, or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army Flying Monkeys for assistance gathering data. If you have information you would like to reach me, you can reach me at Newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, @rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to check out some Psytrance. And I'm going to fade out now with a little something talking about avatars. This was from NPR, talking about how people's vision of digital avatars of themselves affect themselves in real life. Very cool. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, hey, that's what Server said. End of line.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook. The way you see yourself online can affect your behavior offline. In other words, if you want to get thin, get a virtual life. That's what researchers at Stanford University say. Jeremy Bailenson is a professor there. He runs something called the Virtual Human Interaction Lab. I talked with him earlier. So what is a virtual human interaction lab?
Well, we're a lab that studies how the human condition has changed given that people tend to spend lots and lots of time in digital space and interacting not with physical people, but with digital representations of other people. So as a lab, we study what's different now that we're interacting with virtual creatures as opposed to physical people.
Okay, and you can use this fancy lab to make me thin?
What we can do is we can show you a model of your optimal self. In two separate studies now, we've demonstrated that the mere act of watching this causes you to see that weight change is possible and that in your optimal self, you can actually lose weight.
So Professor Bailenson, make me thin. You take me into your lab. What do you do with me?
So you walk into the laboratory, and what we do is we take a series of photographs of your head. You then sit down, and we have a team of people in the other room that use modeling graphics software that builds what we call an avatar of you, which is a three-dimensional digital representation that looks just like you, just as if someone had crafted it using a chisel and clay. What we then do is you put on a head-mounted display. It's a fancy helmet. And once you're inside the virtual world, we hit a button, and right in front of you pops your virtual self. And your virtual self can do stuff that you've never done. So imagine now that you see your virtual self, and your virtual self starts exercising and running on the treadmill. And as you're running, you actually see yourself lose weight.
And so you found that watching the cause and effect happen quickly in virtual reality makes people, I don't know, believe it more? It makes them exercise more in real reality.
There's a psychological concept that's been around for a long time called vicarious reinforcement, which is if I actually see my physical behavior causes weight loss, it enables me to psychologically believe that weight loss is possible. And what we've shown in the lab is that when you do this virtual slimming of the avatar, it then causes people, A, to exercise more in physical space in front of us, and then B, when they come back and report back to us in a week, we've actually found they spent much more time, over an hour a day, exercising.
Okay. So I also understand that you study virtual identity, looking at how differences in how your avatar looks can change the way you feel about how you look in real life.
Right. What we study is in these online worlds, when somebody has an optimal self, how does that change how I think about myself and how I behave in a social manner? Meaning, how do I internalize this new me?
And how do people?
If I put you inside of a virtual simulation and you know you're wearing an avatar that's just a little bit more attractive than the norm, and you then turn around and talk to somebody. If you have an attractive avatar as opposed to a normal avatar, you'll stand about a meter closer to this person.
In virtual reality.
Well, in the first round of studies, we showed, yes, in virtual reality, you behave more confidently, and you're a much more social being when your avatar isn't attractive. When I leave the virtual world, how does this pervade? And we've run a series of studies now. Probably the most stunning data that we found is that, so if I put you in virtual reality, and you have an attractive face as an avatar, then an hour later, when I put you across the hall, we ask you to set up an online dating profile. And what we do is we ask you to choose people that you think you'd be a good match for, and more importantly, people you think that you'd have a chance with. And what we found is that in virtual reality, an hour prior, if you had an attractive face, when you're later choosing people that you think will be good matches, you pick attractive people. Meaning the confidence you've gotten from having a virtual attractive face pervades in the physical world 1 hour later, such that when you're picking potential mates, you think you've got a shot to be with better looking people.
Jeremy Bailenson, it all sounds interesting, but I can't grasp what it means.
It turns out in our daily life now, we talk on cell phones all the time. Kids play video games more than they even watch movies or TV. There's social networking sites like MySpace and online dating, and now we have virtual worlds like Second Life. The big picture is as we move forward, people spend less and less time talking to physical versions of one another and more time talking to digital versions of one another. And what we're showing at the most fundamental psychological level, how you gesture nonverbally, how you talk, how you pick people that you're going to date, the way that you pick your avatar has very, very drastic effects on how you behave.
Jeremy Bailenson runs the Virtual Human Interaction Lab at Stanford University. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you.